said. Because what it says is that no constraint should be applied in the interim to existing plans in contemplation of the new plans.
Right.
Okay, now, federal law may require them to go through every 3 years with their existing plan and make adjustments. You tell me that's true, and I don't doubt you a bit. I think the concern, as I've had it expressed to me, is that the Forest Service might impose new restrictions, not based on new information in their old plan, but based on what they are assuming the new plan will be. Well, now, I don't know whether that's what's going on or not, but I'm told that that's been happening.
If that's happening, for instance, if we have a wilderness area designated during a planned period, and that wilderness area comes out of allowable cut, because at one time they put their allowable cut based upon that many acres of producing timber, they have no choice but to reduce the allowable cut on what they have left, if they're to meet the other parts of the statute.
Yeah, but I don't think that's what's at issue here.
Right.
I really don't think that's what's at issue here. I think what's at issue here is another. Okay, let me cite to you, and I'm not an expert on this, okay? But the example that's been cited to me is on the Mount Hood National Forest.
Mm-hmm.
And as I understand it, they have reduced the cut on the Mount Hood National Forest in contemplation of the new plan. Now, maybe there are other reasons that they did it. But what this resolution speaks to is that the Forest Service shouldn't make interim decisions based on a plan that they haven't yet adopted yet.
Well,
they have other legal responsibilities to adjust their plans. I mean, plans are dynamic. That there's a responsibility to adjust their plans. Like you're saying, if they find out that they only have 60% of the species that they thought they had, they got to make an adjustment. Okay. That's not, I don't think, an issue here. Andy.
If I might, perhaps I can clarify, and I'll address this more in my testimony. I'm Andy Kerr of the Oregon Natural Resources Council. The Forest Service has the ability to take their existing plans and, based on new information, modify them. But the entire inertia of the bureaucracy since the passage of the National Forest Management Act in 1976 has been to produce these new plans. The agency has decided that it wants to make changes, but it wants to make changes in this new plans. So it is unwilling to go back and open up, which requires public review and many of the same things that this new planning process is going to go through. So they want these new plans to go forward. So as a I agree with you that the agency has the ability to amend its old plan or its current plans. The practical reality is that it is not. So the effect is that we have, and I'll address this in my testimony, these environmental abuses going on, overcutting, loss of salmon, steelhead habitat, and things like that, because the agency is late in getting these plans out. So, and
getting
we
these
see,
new plans out.
Getting these new plans out. And we read this resolution as the way it is drafted, the way we've read it, is part of the timber industry's effort to delay forest planning, and I could address in my testimony why they want to delay forest planning later.
Okay. If I could...
Let Mr. Donnell finish.
Yeah, Mr. Donnell. If I could further comment, for instance, what you're talking about is absolutely true. We just had a whole lot of fires in eastern Oregon.
Okay.
And there's 40,000 acres over there got burned. And if you go by Boise Cascade's log yard right now, you will see logs piled in there way beyond what they were normally going to cut. And what they are is a salvage sale. So they have modified the plan in that case.
Right.
And they completely departed from it because of an exigency of the situation. So
right.
The same thing would be happening in the Mount Hood forest. And so what we're saying is that the federal government and the Forest Service has, by law, must make these changes and must follow these situations. A good example is when Mount St. Helens blew up. They had to make a complete shift to what happened over there in the forest in Washington State because of the devastation of the area. They went in there and they took out the timber based upon millions and millions of board feet. It was all laying on the ground. But if they hadn't the ability to do that, then that would have been lost. And so when you put this in the resolution, what you're really saying is, if they want to take more out because of a natural disaster or a problem, they're not supposed to do it. And if they...
No, okay, but let me disagree with you.
Okay.
I hear what you're saying. I mean, it works both ways. Well, and you're making that point very well. But I think the point is that the fact that there was a natural disaster in a certain ranger district would not be contemplation of a new plan. It would be the reality in front of them and the things they have to adjust to in relation to their old plan. But I think the concern is, if you're going to have a planning process and you're going to develop a plan, you don't want the plan being implemented before it's been adopted. I mean, I think that's the concern. Well, now, maybe you want to speak to that, or maybe you see other things in here that I don't see. I mean, I see it as saying,
Okay.
Let's not adopt the plan until we've adopted the plan. Now, maybe I'm not seeing something.
We have a situation of where, as the Forest Service, we're talking about timber cut. Let's just hold up that one issue. As the Forest Service goes through and they find that the type, kind, quantity of timber changes, be bug kill, large case borer beetle, or tussock moth, or whatever, or fire, their new plan will reflect that change. But meanwhile, they're mandated by law to do something about it. And basically, the law says that they're supposed to salvage that material. If they go through and they find that they have been overcutting and their inventory is in error for some reason, because of any reason whatsoever, they also are mandated by law to take care of the problem.
Absolutely.
And so this particular paragraph in here says that irrespective of those constraints, we're supposed to still go along the same road we've always been going on.
Okay, show me where it says that in the resolution.
Well, it says that... the governor of the state of Oregon is directed to urge the United States Forest Service and Bureau of Land Management to continue managing federal lands under existing land use plans.
Well, wouldn't an existing, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I don't understand the words here, but wouldn't an existing land use plan, doesn't that include policies that say that this is our goal in terms of, you know, having this many trees produced per acre or whatever, and if it turns out that our inventory is wrong, we're going to have to make some adjustments, or I mean, wouldn't an existing plan allow for the kind of adjustments you're talking about? I mean, isn't that part of a plan?
Well, that's basically part of the plan, and the
Okay, I don't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, so what I'm saying, okay, so by urging them to continue to operate under the existing plans, I guess I don't interpret that. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Okay, I don't know federal law that well. Okay, but my interpretation of that is that the current plans require them to make the kind of adjustments you're talking about. If they have a natural disaster, if they discover an improper inventory, those kind of things, they have to make adjustments in their existing plan. Mm-hmm. And I don't read this language as saying that they're not supposed to do that. I read this language as saying they're not supposed to adopt, in addition to their responsibilities under the plan, they're not supposed to go in and adopt other practices which are designed to implement a new plan that's expected.
Mr. Chairman, could I just a point there? I think it goes right to very much the situation that we had in 19. I'm John Platt. In 1973, when Senate Bill 100 was passed, you had some plans that were in effect, but when those LCDC goals were put into place, even before plans were reestablished to incorporate those goals were being applied to specific actions because the existing plans weren't in compliance. The NFMA provides standards very similar in that there were new standards for conservation of fish and wildlife that were incorporated in NFMA that were not incorporated in previous land use plans. Those NFMA goals and objectives, 1976. The NFMA was 1976.
Okay.
The plans are ongoing, and there are none adopted now in Oregon. But you have activities that are taking place under old plans that didn't have NFMA standards.
Okay.
And in certain cases, those minimum standards, at least to a certain extent, should be applied to those activities, just as the LCDC goals were applied to operations in the counties and the cities, even though counties and cities did have plans that were not in compliance. And I think the analogy is straightforward and parallel.
So that what you're saying is that a number of existing plans in the federal forest system don't have mechanisms or standards to protect certain things.
Particularly
that new fish standards do require.
That's right, particularly fish and wildlife habitat.
Senator Bradbury, Andy Kerrigan, some of the current plans that we're referring to were prepared in 1964. They're that old, that out of date. Prior to passage of the Endangered Species Act, you're well aware of the body of federal legislation promoting the conservation of fisheries resources. All of those laws do not apply. And the new forest management plans are to, you know, bring it up to speed, become consistent with those.
Mr. Donnell, do you want to continue?
Yeah, I'd like to make one final comment that the way this is set up, the governor makes a decision as to who's to be involved in his planning process and his recommendation. And I'd like to suggest that the group be composed of the following people: the head of the Forestry Department, the Oregon Department of Fish, head of Department of Fish and Wildlife, the head of the Department of Environmental Quality, the head of the Water Board, and the head of the Economic Development.
We don't spell out in here specifically who's on it.
No, sir, you do not. And the reason that I'm making this suggestion is that you have a forestry department that would handle the timber industry, Department of Fish and Wildlife would handle the wildlife values, Department of Environmental Quality would address what the plan will do as far as state and federal laws, the Water Board on water laws, and then the economic development, how the whole thing would impact the economics of the state of Oregon. And I'll answer any further questions, but that's basically my testimony. And I did would like to say that we would be willing to work with your administrator or your legal counsel to take care of the problems that we've identified.
Okay, thank you very much. Any further questions? Proceed, Liz.
Next point that we'll be speaking to is Nancy Peterson from Portland, Oregon.
My name is Nancy Peterson, and I am here on behalf of the Portland Audubon Society Conservation Committee. I have comments on the Forest Service planning process, but where they would apply to other federal agency planning processes, I would like you to do that. 11 years after the enactment of the National Forest Management Act, which told the U.S. Forest Service to develop plans for the national forest, there's still nothing but a mixture of inconsistent and outdated policies and plans to direct the management of all those forest valuable resources. It's our position that, while not perfect, the new plans will be a vast improvement, and the current planning process is the best chance we have to ensure that wildlife, fish, plant, timber, water, recreational resources on those forests receive the best treatment possible. These plans are long overdue because many of the conflicts that they are intended to resolve were here in 1976 and have become more acute. There are wildlife species in trouble, many stream miles of fish habitat destroyed, and ecosystems that are disappearing. These are public values with economic importance for Oregon, and to further delay the best chance we have to protect them is to risk their destruction. It's unclear to us why the governor needs to be directed to be involved in the forest planning process, or to coordinate the involvement of state agencies. Each provision in this proposed resolution is already a matter of state or federal law or the stated policy of the Forest Service. If there is a need to direct the governor, it is to direct him to urge the Forest Service to complete those plans as quickly as possible. Fish, wildlife, water, and other non-timber resources that the national forests produce would clearly be benefited by lower timber harvests. However, lower harvests that are proposed by the agency in some of these plans are primarily the result of belated documentation that those forests simply can't produce the amount of timber previously thought. One of the simple improvements in data is the realization that lakes and roads don't grow trees and therefore shouldn't be included in the timber land base. Put differently, under current management direction, we aren't even producing a sustainable timber harvest, much less a sustainable yield of fish, wildlife, or clean water. We urge you to lead an effort to pull the planning process back from what seems to be a slide into oblivion. Please tell all parties involved to act, not delay. Thank you.
questions for Nancy Peterson? Thank you, Nancy.
I'm Andy Kerr. I'm with the Oregon Natural Resources Council. We have very serious concerns about the resolution in its present form, and I've been working on national forest planning and such matters for over 11 years professionally, and I've never before seen such an opportunity here to make such a radical departure in a wise forest policy. It's not what it's written. I guess I'm worried more about the effect of it. But before I address the particular specifics of the resolution, I'd like to do a little background for you of why. Let's look at the current state of federal forest management to a degree. And the paper that is being passed out to you, entitled Forest Service Data Shows Massive Overcutting on Oregon's National Forest, the Forest Service has done new timber inventories as a result of their new planning process. And these inventories, as Nancy Peterson just pointed out, show that in many places where they originally thought they had trees, such as lakes and roads and things like that, they don't. They never, in the lakes, they never did until they put the roads down and they had some trees. They've also looked at the rate of growth of those trees, and they found out that in many cases they aren't growing as fast. So most of the reduction that the timber industry is anticipating and decrying, the Forest Service is looking at, doesn't have to do with additional constraints for fish and wildlife or recreation or scenery or anything like that. It gets back to timber. They're simply, the trees aren't there. Now, the Forest Service has recognized this and is planning to make those adjustments in these new plans. We see this resolution as delaying that, and let me get to that in a little bit.
Okay.
There was a problem serious enough to cause the United States Congress to write a new law in 1976, National Forest Mismanagement. They passed a law called the National Forest Mismanagement Act as a result of National Forest Mismanagement. They ordered new plans, which should be completed by 1985. That deadline passed without a draft being issued on any Oregon National Forest, and there are 13. So there was a problem in 1975, 76, when the law was passed. The plans that they have in effect, many of these plans go back to the 1960s, as I stated. They're hopelessly out of date. The agency has looked at amending these plans, but they really want to get these new plans out. So the effect is, the agency, if you say to delay these plans until all the forest plans until they're all out, and so you look at the cumulative effects, we're going to have continued overcutting, continued forest abuse that these new plans are trying to address. Now, the Forest Service inventoried their timber sites, and they looked at where reforestation is less than 5 years is unlikely. They looked at where logging would cause unacceptable resource damage, and they looked at the maintenance of minimal levels of other multiple use resources. Now, it's that third point that I'm referring to on page 2 of the statement that is the timber industry's most freaked out about. They're worried about wider riparian areas for salmon and steelhead. They're worried about leaving some old-growth trees standing for elk winter range. They're worried about spotted owls and things like that. But when you look at the reductions the Forest Service is proposing between their old plans and their new plans, 90% of it has to do with this timber issue, whether it's there or not. Now, we would argue under the National Forest Management Act that the Forest Service has a responsibility to not overcut the national forest, but that's what they're doing. And I refer you to the table on page 3, and by each national forest is listed, the first column of numbers is the current plans that are in effect now. With this new timber information that they developed using aerial photos and computer techniques and things like that. So we have the best timber data we've ever had. I would suggest that it's not perfect, and I have my problems with it, but it's the best we've ever had. That's the actual sustained yield level, a little over 3 billion board feet for Oregon National Forest. That's what could be cut, sustained yield. You cut as much this year as you're going to cut next year and next year and next year. When we look at what Congress has funded and what the Forest Service is going to sell in 1987, we see it's 3.8 billion board feet, almost 3.9. The result is we're seeing a 28% overcutting occurring. And that's occurring in fiscal year 87. It occurred in 86, 85, and because of this issue of the lakes, we've always been overcutting. We always cut against those lakes. The lakes aren't, we now determine the lakes don't have trees growing on them, but we always cut. So we've been overcutting, you know, since we've been cutting the national forest. This is going to continue on until the new plans go into effect, because that's the method that the Forest Service says to the Congress, this is sustained yield. This is where we want to be. Now, if we are to, the effect of this resolution I see is part of an industry, a well-orchestrated and I must admit, frankly, very effective effort to delay national forest planning. It's in the industry's interest to keep these current plans in effect, which are artificially high from a timber standpoint, as long as possible. Because these new plans are going to make adjustments in timber sales because the Forest Service has recognized that trees simply aren't there to sustain it. So it's the industry strategy to continue to delay, to keep these cuts artificially high. And that, I think, is what we fear, conservationists and sportsmen fear, is the intent of this clause to say, let's wait until all the plans are out so we could add up the numbers. What, now, if the committee would be interested in suggesting and taking our suggestion of an amendment to the effect of some direction to the governor to pressure for an amendment that the current plans be amended based on this new timber information. This isn't a government policy coming down that, well, we decided now that wildlife is more important than it used to be, and we're going to make a policy shift in the priority or importance of things, the relative balance. This is a constraint that's put on us by nature. It's the ability of those forests to grow trees. This is a constraint that we really can't mess with, and we have a history and a long debate in conservation of the national forests is that of the principle of sustained yield. We do not cut more than grows. We are doing that. We have been doing that. And you know, the first years we've been doing it when we didn't know it, that perhaps is excusable. But now that we do know it, and we are not making changes, that is what concerns us. Another point is, as I pointed out, it's 1976, there was a problem. If we go forward and delay these plans, as I think this resolution will, have provide political fodder to the industry to continue their campaign, we're going to take the opportunity that the National Forest Planning Process is providing to resolve these issues and conflicts, which has provisions for public involvement. And hearings and reviews by state agencies, by citizens, by trade associations, by everybody. And that, we're going to move out of that arena into other arenas so we could make sure that our interest in fish and wildlife and a sustainable timber supply are available. And those other arenas are litigation, legislation, and things like that. So we're going to, conservationists and sportsmen are very frustrated with the delays that have occurred. And we see no end to it. If the industry backed off tomorrow and said, yes, we'd like the plans out, I don't think they're going to do that. But if they did, it's going to be until the end of, I would probably guess, 1989 before the Forest Service could do it. It just takes a lot of time to issue a draft environmental impact statement, take the public review, consider all the features, and put out a final plan. I would hate to have to tell you, if I had to bet, I would bet I was going to lose money because I would have lost a lot of money. I would have said these plans were mostly going to be out in 1980. That's when the Forest Service first deadline was. You know, then 81, 82, 83, 84. It goes on. It's always a few years in advance, and there's no end to it. So our frustration is that this delay, and it's an incessant delay. The industry talks about, well, we got to consider these things, but what they don't really want is the information out on the table. If you want to have the debate, buffer forest policy, we need to have the information on the table. So the industry's effort is to keep this information from coming out. And it certainly is to keep the decisions from being made to bring us back to a sustained yield of timber. Now, I estimate that about 90% of the reductions the Forest Service is proposing is for to bring us back to a sustained yield of timber. Now, you may think that, that salmon aren't important, or owls, or elk, or scenery, or things like that. That's what that remaining 10% gets to. To make sure that some species don't go extinct, to make sure that we have some salmon running up and down our streams. But most of the reduction has to do with timber. And it seems to me that we need to all agree that we don't want to mine our forests and overcut them. But that's what we're doing. So, to conclude, you've guessed that we're really not keen on this thing as drafted. We're concerned about the one voice concept. It's become a catchword. And we think that it's a real problem because, and I think the way that Oregon and the Legislative Assembly over the decades has set up governmental structure, you have given a mandate to the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife to ensure that no species is depleted. That's their mandate. You've also given mandates to the Department of Environmental Quality that you want clean water. Well, those mandates are sometimes in conflict with the mandates that you've given to the Board of Forestry, the Department of Forestry, which gets back to the consistency question and the adequacy of state plans. We have a Department of Forestry which is telling the United States Forest Service to cut such an obscenely high amount of timber that it could not be sustained. It could not, you're not going to have many salmon left and things like that, that other forest products, such as salmon. I mean, there's other kinds of forest products, as you're well aware, Senator Bradbury. So what we would like to see is, if you are insistent on passing some type of resolution, is to redraft it to make sure that a couple things, that it's crystal clear that the intent is to speed up or to bring back on track a process that has been hopelessly delayed for going on a decade of delay. Now, and if you, we think you need to do that, so you're sending a message to the people of Oregon and to the federal forest management agencies and to the governor that this legislative assembly is in favor of getting back to a sustained yield of timber, and that is it in favor of having salmon and steelhead. Let me just throw out an example to conclude with. These current plans on the Sayula National Forest has resulted overall forest-wide a reduction in 43% of the salmon and steelhead habitat productivity. Now, as long as and that's an increasing trend, you know, as they cut, continue to overcut and have an effect on streams and destroy habitat, you know, until those new plans come into effect, we're not going to stop, let alone slow down that trend of habitat destruction. So, to conclude, we would urge you to accept some of our amendments, or we're glad to work with you, and I'm open, of course, for any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Kerr? One on Sayula Law. Now, it was my impression that there was a court case on...
The court case is on the Mapleton Ranger District, one of four districts on the Sayula National Forest. That case was brought by the National Wildlife Federation, the Oregon Wildlife Federation, and the Sayula Task Force. That court case has been modified by some congressional action, but what the court found there, according to Forest Service data, was that the loss of spawning and steelhead habitat was in the vicinity of 50%. So the Mapleton District is a little worse overall than the forest. And that's one of the reasons I think those organizations chose to litigate there. But there's other districts on the Sayula National Forest that are not affected by any injunction or court action, where, again, 43% reduction. And that's a continuing trend. I can't give you a figure, but we could just expect, under these current plans, which the agency is unwilling to amend, continued increase in that destruction rate.
Thank you. Any further questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Platt.
Mr. Chairman, my name is John Platt. I'm Policy Assistant for Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission. I've been asked to deliver testimony on behalf of the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation. as well as the Warm Springs Tribe. I was asked by the Confederated Tribes of the Uintah Indian Reservation Board of Trustees Chairman Elwood Padua to deliver this testimony, as well as I should also mention that the testimony was reviewed by the Fish and Wildlife Committee of the Umatilla Tribe and developed by their natural resources staff. The Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation are grateful for the opportunity to address the proposed state-federal lands policy contained in HJR 41. The tribe is especially concerned with this policy because of the effect it may have on the lands that they ceded to the United States in 1855. The Treaty of 1855, and on which they reserved rights to take fish, as well as to hunt, gather roots and berries, and pasture stock. These ceded lands stretch from the Snake River in Washington to the Strawberry Range on the south, and from the John Day River in the east, or in the John Day River in the west, to the Hell's Canyon in the east. Currently, the Umatilla Tribe is involved in both the National Forest Management Act and the Federal Land Planning and Management Act process as a means to impose conservation standards upon federal land managers in order to implement the rights that they reserved in their treaties. HJR 41 would, in the